Ho, Bojo, Genwa, Manowabin, Miigwech for tuning into this podcast today. This is a Ho Mano Nikon, and I'm Sam, and this is Josh, and we're going to have a conversation about something today, and hopefully you'll get something important out of it, or at least you'll have a good time listening.
All right, thanks everyone for coming back. This is our third episode. Got Sam in the studios with us. And last one, Sam, we talked about the seven grandfathers is how we ended the previous episode. And today, Sam really wants to get in the black elk, and we're going to get to it. He's recording some of it right now, actually. But to get it going, Sam, last one we talked about on episode two, we talked about the seven grandfathers. But black elk, he talks about something else. We're going to throw this twist out here. I'm going to have a question for you, Sam, so I want to put your mind to it. Then after everything's all said and done, I got a legend. Sit back and listen. Sam, feel free to chirp in anytime while I'm reading the story, all right? Now, Sam, I'm going to throw you a little twist, okay? So, we're talking about the seven grandfathers, right? And here you go, I'm going to read you something else completely. And I saw that the sacred hoop of my people is one of many hoops that made one circle, wide as daylight and as starlight, and in the center grew one mighty flowering tree to shelter all the children of one mother and one father, and I saw that as holy. There I stood there, two men coming from the east, head flying like arrows flying, and between them rose the daybreak star. They came and gave herb to me and said, "With this on earth you shall undertake anything I do." It was the daybreak star herb, the herb of understanding. And they told me to drop on the earth. I saw it falling far. And when it struck the earth, it rooted, it grew and flowered. Four blossoms on one stem, a blue, a white, a scarlet, and a yellow. And the rays from these streamed upward to the heavens so that all creatures saw it, and no place was there darkness. Then the voice said, "Your six grandfathers, now you shall go back to them." And we'll stop right there. So that's black elk. Of course, it's always up to interpretation, right? So you've... Or if that's actually supposed to be seven grandfathers. Six is a different number, right? I mean, have you heard anywhere else where there's just the six grandfathers?
You know, it is always up for interpretation. However, in this case, black elk did mean to say six. That's not a typo or anything. In his vision that he had when he was a young boy, he was in his vision, and I think that's an excerpt from the chapter that describes his vision. But, he was taken inside of the earth and was presented to, he saw these six old men. And they each had something to kind of tell him to say that they were proud of him for, and these gifts that they offered him. And this is odd what I'm going to say. But before that, I think we also are at more of a loss to explain the seven grandfathers than somebody like Black Elk was to explain his six. Because what I see mostly going around, I haven't had a vision where I've been taken into the earth, and I haven't heard a lot of people saying that they have either. But we'll associate these seven grandfathers with teachings, and they're like humility and bravery and wisdom and a lot of good qualities. Sometimes they'll say the seven grandfather teachings, and on that there's like 9 to 12 sometimes. Like Yatso Kaywin is one, and that's storytelling. I think that's important, especially when the list has bravery and courage on it, and it doesn't include storytelling. Oops, sorry, we had a little bit of a dog outburst there. Anytime I'm recording here at my house, there's a chance there will be a dog outburst. But back to what I was talking about with Black Elk and his six, like, as he goes on to explain his vision, you want to understand these six grandfathers that he's talking about as being the directions and then the sky and the earth. That's the way you want it to make sense. And eventually you start wondering, well, are they the elements, you know? Fire, water, earth, wind, ether, and then spirit. And so, like, you can kind of make these claims, however, as his vision progresses, all six grandfathers go to each direction and stand behind the horses that are set up in the way that they want him to see them for each portion of the vision. And so, like, these guys are obviously going to each corner and they're moving around, so they don't just represent this corner or that. And so what I've kind of come to understand it as is, like, Black Elk, he was able to attain something with the universe, whereas he understood his role in the universe. And so if he is eternal and experiencing in the physical, and there are seven sacred sets, or seven sacred, like, units for everything. Seven is said to be a magical number, and you know how it shows up all the time. Well, then infinitely in the universe, there would be seven Black Elks to help himself with, because once you realize that you are the whole universe, then the whole universe helps you because it's part of you, you're part of it. And so once you can connect like this, it'll try to understand. And of course, this vision he had was when he was just a little boy. I dug out my book to look through there to see if I could find anything in the Fool's Crow book.
Yeah, let me stop you right there, Sam, real quick. Just give you a little background on, since you're talking about Fool's Crow. Frank Fool's Crow is a Lakota Sioux spiritual leader. He's a Yuwipi medicine man, and he is definitely the nephew of Black Elk. He helped to negotiate the end of Wounded Knee in 1973, actually. He was born on the Pine Ridge Reservation near Wounded Knee in South Dakota. He quit school in the third grade so he could work in order to help support his family. During his younger years, he actually went traveling around Buffalo Bill Cody in the Wild West show. In 73, members of the American Indian Movement seized the village of Wounded Knee to protest the United States government policies on Native Americans. This lasted, 71 days. And it ended after agreements reached between the federal government and the Sioux delegation, which Fool's Crow was part of. So, Fool's Crow, I mean, he's very relevant still to this day. And even in 75, he gave a prayer to the United States Senate. So, he's still one that can, even because people think of Black Elk being so distant, and Fool's Crow's not that distant. He died in 89. They thought he was 99 years old, but no one actually knew his exact age. All right, back to your response, Sam.
Because I do think that Fool's Crow discusses it. They have some other things that they both put in their books about helpers. And I believe that Black Elk had like 405 helpers. And that's like spirit helpers that he can ask for help whenever he's doing a ceremony. And at the time that it came that Fool's Crow had become known, as a healer. Black Elk, you know, kind of wanted to test him and see what he knew, because Fool's Crow was Black Elk's nephew. And they had a discussion about these stone men helpers. And I believe Fool's Crow said that he had located, or like he had a few more. And of course Black Elk had to, you know, agree that those 405 stone men helpers were all part of the same one spirit. And so I believe that Fool's Crow actually asked him about it, but it must be in the second book, which my copy is out on loan right now. So anyway, I hope somebody's learning from it. It's a great book.
Oh, thank you.
No, and we're going to go definitely away from Black Elk for the moment, and I'm going to tell you a story, an ancient story. So just buckle your seatbelt and get ready for the ride. This is a legend. The legend of God, legend of the devil, and the legend of the dragon. There's once an old man living alone with his wife. They had a horse. And they had a dog. And they hunted and fished only at the big lake. And one time they could not get any fish into their nets. And they were very hungry. The man went to look after his net in the morning and found a jackfish with a large head. As he was going to kill the fish, he said, "Hold on, dear man. Don't kill me right away." The old man stopped. And the fish told the old man to take all of its scales off and not to lose any. And go put these scales in the garden. It also said, "Cut off his fins and place them in the garden too. He cut off his head and give it to his wife to eat. Half of his body to be fed to the dog, and the other to the horse." The old man shut the stable, but did not look at it for 4 days and four nights. And he did not look at the scales for 4 days and four nights. But each morning after that, he looked. The old man then killed it, took it home. He told his wife about it. She said, "Is that true?" "Yes," answered the old man. "Well, we'll obey. We are poor and hungry. Maybe we shall have good luck." He scaled and cut the fish and put in the garden. He also fed his wife, the dog, the horse, as he'd been told, and shut back the stable. For 4 days and nights, he could not sleep. His wife became pregnant. On the fourth morning, she had two sons, and the old man was glad. He ran to the stable and found that the mare had two foals. The dog had two pups. He went to the garden, and there was silver money where the scales had been placed. There were two fine swords where the fins had been. The old man ran to tell his wife what happened, and they were delighted. And after that, the man always caught fish. And soon after time, his boys grew up. And one time when they were home in the evening, the oldest boy said, "Are there any other people in the world?" "Certainly there are many. Where can I find them?" "You can find them anywhere," the youth said. So the youngest said, "I'll start tomorrow to try and visit some people." He left his sword and told his brother, "I shall take yours and leave mine hanging here. Do not touch it. If I have trouble or if I'm killed, my sword will become rusty." Then he went off. About dinner time, he dismounted and drank from a spring. He found silver water, and when he dipped his little fingers into it, it became solid silver. He put some of the water on the horse's ears, and they became silver. He did the same to the dog and also to his own, and they started to fall off. And when he came to a large town, he took off his clothes, found some old ones, put on rags around his finger and a handkerchief over his hair, and he had a little box in which he put the horse and dog after making them small, and hid them in a blacksmith's shop. The blacksmith looked at him and said, "Where are you from?" "Is there a town here? I'm very poor." "Oh, come in," said the blacksmith. "Let me feed you." The man said, "I can keep you here and let you do chores in the house." So he stayed there one night. And then the blacksmith said, "This king has a fine daughter, and she's going to be fed to the wendigo that has 8 heads. He only eats people." "Oh, well, when's she going to be taken there tomorrow?" asked the youngest boy. "Tomorrow morning." Well, the next day after the young child did all of his work, or young man, I guess, right, the younger brother, he mounted his horse, took the dog, put on his own clothes and rode out of the city. After a while, he heard some weeping in the woods. He turned in that direction and found a young girl who was crying. She stopped when she saw him. The young man said, "Why are you crying?" She goes, "There's no use to telling you." He said, "Oh no, tell me. Where are you going?" Once again, "There's no use telling you." He said, "Oh yes, you must tell me." Then the little girl, seeing that he was a stranger, said, "I will tell you. I'm going to yonder bluff. There's an eight-handed Manitou there, and I'm going to be eaten by him." "Why?" said the young man. "He wants me." He goes, "What if you do not go?" "Then he'll devour everyone in the city. Therefore, I must go." The youth man said, "I'll go first. You can go when I come back." "No, no, you must not go. I am not going there for life. I'm going there to die." The young man said, "If that is so, I must see him first." The young man said, "I'll go and come back, and you stay here." The girl said, "Well, go on, but he'll kill you." And she gave the boy a ring, and he went to the bluff and saw the trees that were shaken by the breath of Manitou. He stopped and said to his horse and dog, "Try as hard as you can to help me." And then he rode on. The horse and dog sank deep into the soil. The boy took his sword out of his holster and cut off one head, which sprang back again. Then he told his dog to catch it, and he hit the monster again, cut off another head. The dog seized and shook it. Then the youth cut off another one. And the horse kicked it. When he cut off four heads, the Manitou was not breathing very strongly. And finally he killed him. He cut out all the tongues and put them in a handkerchief. When he came back, he found the girl waiting. And he told her that he killed the Manitou. He told the girl to go home and take the tongues of her, but not to tell anyone who killed it. He said, "Give the tongues to your father and say that a young fellow did it, but you do not know who." The blacksmith was... And if you want to, if our listeners want to support the mission, I guess, of Sam and myself, feel free to go to our webpage. It's anchor.fm/MNO-NIKAN. You can find us on Spotify or whatever to help support us. Just go to our webpage, click support, and a couple options will pop up, you know. It's amazing how far 99 cents will go to two guys like us, right? So, hopefully right now we're actually trying to get money, do some traveling, because I really want to go up north and, you know, really get some good stuff going. So, thank you in advance, Miigwech. All right, back to the show. I was working at home. "Where are you going?" "Home." "No, you have to be eaten by the Manitou." And she said, "The Manitou has been killed." And the blacksmith said, "Nobody can kill him." The girl showed him the tongues. Then the blacksmith believed her. He said, "Who killed him?" And the girl said, "I do not know. He is a youth." He said, "Go home and tell your father that I killed him. If you don't, I will kill you." The girl agreed and went. And he went with her. Father and mother asked why she had come back, and she told him that the blacksmith had killed the Manitou. She called him, and they asked, "How did you do it?" He said, "I hit his tongues." The king was very glad and gave the girl to the blacksmith. The youth went home, put his horse back in the box, and dressed in his old clothes. There was to be a 4 days dance before this wedding, right? After a 3 nights dance, the blacksmith was very glad. He told the boys that this was the last night. Then the lad put on his clothes. He came to the lodge and sat down by the door. The girl knew him at once and told her father secretly that he had slain the monster. So the king invited him to a better place. The blacksmith wanted to go out pretending that his stomach pained him, but was not allowed to leave. He was locked up, taken to sea, and thrown in. And the youth, he married the girl. And the king gave him half the town, half the money, half of everything, because he saved his daughter, right? So they went upstairs in the room, and there at the top, on the east side of the house, from what could be seen was a blue fire. "What kind of fire is that?" asked the youth. Princess said, "Do not ask about it and never go near it." Well, of course, you know, the youth, he just killed that Manitou, so he said, "Well, what's this?" So the next day, he took his little horse and dog and went to the fire. There he saw an old long house. He entered the first room, but no one was there. And after a while, he heard someone. The door opened and a white old-headed woman came in and said, "Grandchild, hold your little dog, because he will bite me. I am cold." He said, "Warm yourself, the dog will not touch you. You must tie him," said the lady. The boy said, "I have nothing to tie him with." So the old lady gave him one hair and said, "No, sis, tie him with that." The youth did so, and he also tied the horse. The woman had a cane, and she touched him on the feet, and he died. So a few mornings later, the older brother had been at home, saw rust on the sword, and he said to his father, "I fear brother's dead somewhere, for his sword is rusty. I must go try and find him." His father, after many thoughts, said, "Be careful." So the elder brother left the house, and about noon he found the same spring as did his brother. At evening he came to the city and went to the chief's house. The girl came out and kissed him and asked where he'd been, but he did not answer. They had supper, and he thought to himself, "This must be my brother's wife." But at night he refused to go to bed, and through the window he saw the blue fires. He goes, "What kind of fires are those?" She said, "Why, didn't you not go over there to see?" So in the morning he went there, and when he arrived, he saw his younger brother's horse and the dog tied with the brass wire lying down, frozen death. He went to the lodge and saw that the brother was also dead by the fire. And soon he heard someone coming. An old woman said, "I am cold. Warm yourself by the fire, but first tie your little dog." He refused to do so. And finally said, "Now, Granny, make that man, horse, and dog alive. If you do not at once, I shall send the dog after you." She said, "No, sis, I cannot bring a dog to life." He said, "You have to." She said, "No." So then he put the dog on her. The dog bit her. The horse kicked her. She said, "Stop it, stop it. I'll bring them to life." So he stopped the animals, and the old woman walked forward. But the youth, the oldest brother, stayed away from that cane. She said, "Take this little bottle and put it on your brother." As soon as drops of liquid from the bottle hit his mouth, he came to, and so did his horse and his dog. Then the brothers killed the old woman. They took the bottle away from her and went home. As they rode together, the elder brother said, "You must be married, because your wife mistake me for you, but I only let her sleep with my arm. That's how I found out." Oh, the younger brother, hearing this, became jealous, became outraged. He drew back and shot his brother with his revolver. Then he killed his dog and his horse. So he went home. His wife was so glad to see him. She goes, "Hey," she goes, "I do not understand why you only let me have your hand last night and didn't let me sleep with you." Hearing this, the younger brother began to cry for his brother who he had killed. So he got back on his horse and went back to the corpse. There he cried over his little brother. His dog ran around the dead body and began to look inside the coat. And there he found the woman's little bottle. He put some liquid on the wound, and his older brother came back to life. Put some on his dog and his horse, and they all came too. They went home. They put away their horses and dogs and sat down. The younger one's wife saw them, and she could not tell them apart. So on the following day, they started to return to their parents, but they came to a fork in the road, and they decided to go in different directions. The older brother took one. He said, "I'll go this way, and from now on my name will be God." The other said, "I will follow the other road, and I will be the devil." And here we are at the end of the journey. That's just started to begin.
I tell you, I'm a little at a loss for words for that story. A lot of, made my imagination go wild. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be here again, have a new episode soon. I hope you've enjoyed this one. Lots to think about, lots to contemplate for next time. If you have any questions, feel free to email them to us at ahomanonikon@gmail.com. And if we can, we'll get back to you, or we'll mention you in a future podcast with the answer. Have a great day. Bon appétit.